In the 16th century, English historian John Fox coined the term Middle Age to describe the thousand-year span between early Christianity and the Reformation. Despite historians' efforts to update this terminology, these labels persist, often carrying negative connotations of darkness and barbarism. Yet this period, spanning from Rome's fall to the Renaissance, represents one of history's most dynamic eras, a time when power structures constantly evolved as empires rose and fell, religions spread and fractured, and innovations transformed society. From Attila the Hun to Joan of Arc, the medieval world shaped our modern existence in ways both profound and surprising. The Western Roman Empire's collapse in the 5th century triggered a revolution whose aftershocks still reverberate today. As imperial authority dissolved, wealthy families buried treasures as insurance against political instability. By century's end, the once mighty Western Empire had completely disintegrated, though its eastern half would continue as Byzantium. Rome's extraordinary rise had been partly enabled by favorable climate conditions during the Roman climate optimum, 200 BC to 150 AD, which brought unusually warm, wet weather that increased agricultural productivity across the Mediterranean. At its height under Emperor Trajan, Rome controlled 5 million square kilometers and governed a quarter of humanity. The empire's military might formed its backbone, with 450,000 troops consuming over half the state budget. Though occasionally defeated, Rome's ability to absorb losses, escalate conflicts, and exact pitiless revenge meant it lost many battles, but precious few wars. During the 200-year Pax Romana following Augustus's accession, Rome offered exceptional stability and prosperity to those living under its protection. Rome's unique approach to citizenship proved a key advantage. Unlike other ancient empires, Rome gradually extended citizenship to provincial elites, retired auxiliaries, and freed slaves. Finally, in 212 AD, Emperor Caracalla granted citizenship to all free people across the provinces. This willingness to assimilate conquered peoples prioritized Roman values over ethnic origin, allowing emperors themselves to come from diverse backgrounds. Trajan and Hadrian were Spanish, while Septimius Severus and Caracalla had African and Syrian heritage. While Rome created remarkable cultural unity through language, law, and architecture, slavery remained its darkest aspect. As Apuleius depicted in his novel The Golden Ass, many slaves endured horrific treatment. Bodies covered with livid weals, whip-scarred backs, branded foreheads, and fettered ankles. Despite occasional rebellions like the Spartacus War, there was no movement to abolish slavery, which was considered essential to a free society. Rome's transformation from pagan empire to Christian one represents one of history's most consequential religious revolutions. Everything changed with Constantine's rise to power in 306 AD. After reportedly seeing a blazing cross in the sky with the message, "In this sign conquer," before defeating his rival Maxentius, Constantine embraced Christianity and issued the Edict of Milan in 313 that promised non-discrimination against Christians. His patronage transformed Christianity from persecuted cult to imperial religion. The Age of the Barbarians dawned as Rome's western provinces slipped from imperial control. By the end of the 5th century AD, former Roman territories had been divided among peoples once scorned as savages. The Middle Ages began on the banks of the Volga in AD 370 when the Huns appeared, climate refugees armed with powerful composite bows and exceptional mounted archery skills. Their westward migration set off a chain reaction that would ultimately bring down the Western Roman Empire. When Romans transported thousands of Gothic refugees across the Danube, they created a crisis that soon turned sour. Roman officials Lupicinus and Maximus cruelly exploited starving Thuringian families, forcing them to exchange their children as slaves for dog meat. By 377, Gothic rebellions erupted into full warfare, culminating in the disaster at Adrianople, where Emperor Valens and up to 20,000 Romans died. Despite this setback, the empire stabilized under Emperor Theodosius I, who pragmatically settled Goths in Thrace and employed their warriors to fill gaps in Roman forces. After his death in 395, his teenage sons inherited a divided realm with power exercised by regents. The situation deteriorated when the Huns resumed their westward migration, displacing more tribes. By 406, Vandals, Alans, and Suevi had crossed the Rhine into Gaul, ravaging the province and massacring thousands. While Rome struggled against multiple threats, Britain rapidly lost its Roman character. By the 440s, most signs of Roman civilization had disappeared, as estates were abandoned, trade networks dissolved, and towns shrank. Around 450, desperate British chieftains sent the groan of the Britons to Roman general Aetius, lamenting, "The barbarians drive us to the sea drives us to the barbarians," but received no help. The final Western emperor was teenage Romulus Augustus, installed by his father Orestes in 475. He lasted just 11 months before Odoacer, a tall Gothic officer leading Heruli, Rugi, and Skyri troops, overthrew him in September 476. Rather than claiming imperial title, Odoacer ruled as King Rex, sending the imperial regalia to Constantinople and acknowledging the Eastern Emperor's theoretical supremacy. This marked the formal end of the Western Roman Empire. As the Western Roman world transformed under barbarian kings, a devastating bubonic plague swept through Asia Minor in the mid-6th century. John of Ephesus documented apocalyptic scenes of the first global pandemic, with corpses piling in streets and entire families perishing in silent houses. This plague, caused by Yersinia pestis and spread by fleas, ravaged three continents, killing millions and transforming the Mediterranean world. When Emperor Justin died in August 527, his nephew Justinian ascended the throne after already wielding considerable power. His wife Theodora, despite humble origins as the daughter of a bear trainer, played a vital role in imperial governance, particularly in helping Justinian navigate the empire's theological factions. Upon taking power, Justinian prioritized legal reform, believing imperial majesty should be armed with laws as well as glorified with arms. Within 6 months, he ordered a complete recodification of Roman law under the brilliant Greek lawyer Tribonian. By April 529, they had compiled the Justinianic Code, a comprehensive 12-book legal framework covering civil, ecclesiastical, criminal, and public law. This was followed by the Digest in 533, which rationalized classical jurisprudence while infusing it with Christian principles. These legal reforms had lasting impact, with any nation using codified law today owing a debt to Justinian and Tribonian's work. In January 532, Constantinople erupted in the Nika riots, a violent uprising that nearly toppled Justinian's rule. Despite Justinian's attempts to placate the mob, the riots intensified over 5 days. According to Procopius, it was Theodora who steeled his resolve, declaring she would rather die as empress than live as a fugitive. Justinian ordered Belisarius to lead imperial troops in a massacre of rioters crapped in the Hippodrome, with Procopius claiming 30,000 civilians were killed. While rebuilding Constantinople was Justinian's immediate response to the riots, his greatest achievement came through military conquest. After securing peace with Persia in 532, he dispatched a massive fleet carrying 15,000 troops under General Belisarius to recapture North Africa from the Vandals. The campaign was remarkably successful, with Belisarius swiftly defeating the Vandals and entering Carthage on September 14, 533. Justinian's vision of Roman reconquest faced a deadlier enemy than barbarian armies, bubonic plague. In 536, an ominous darkening of the sky lasted 18 months, caused by massive volcanic eruptions that triggered global climate change. Temperatures fell by 2°C, harvests failed, and agricultural production collapsed worldwide. Meanwhile, plague struck, beginning in Pelusium in July 541 and spreading rapidly through Mediterranean trade networks, killing thousands daily in Constantinople. Heraclius, who killed the incompetent Phocas in 610, became Justinian's true heir, reigning for over 30 years and completing Byzantium's transformation from Roman to medieval Greek state. The defining struggle of his reign was the devastating war with Persia. In the 610s, Persian forces captured Mesopotamia, Syria, Palestine, Egypt, and much of Asia Minor. By 615, Persians threatened Constantinople itself. After rebuilding his military, Heraclius counterattacked in the 620s. Following victory at Nineveh in 628, he nearly captured Ctesiphon. The Persian king Khosrow II was overthrown and murdered by his son, who immediately sued for peace and returned all captured territories. 6 centuries of Roman-Persian warfare ended with Khosrow's death. Heraclius adopted the Greek title Basileus rather than Augustus, cementing Byzantium's Greek identity. Yet this triumph proved fleeting. No sooner had Persia fallen than a new power emerged, the Arabs. In the scorching summer of 634 to 636 AD, the sword of God, Khalid ibn al-Walid, arrived at Damascus's eastern gate. After converting to Islam in the 620s, Khalid had proven his worth through victories in Arabia, Iraq, and now Syria. Damascus, a prestigious Byzantine city with ancient walls, 7 heavily guarded gates, and a Greek-Armenian garrison, presented a formidable challenge. Without siege engines, the Arabs relied on blockade tactics, gradually wearing down the city's resistance over several months. This victory was soon followed by a decisive Arab triumph at the Battle of Yarmouk in 636, where Khalid's inspired leadership and tactical brilliance overcame a much larger Byzantine force. Jerusalem surrendered in 638, and by 641, the strategic port of Caesarea had fallen. The dying Emperor Heraclius could only utter the prophetic words, "Rest in peace, Syria." Mecca, situated in the Hejaz region of Western Arabia, was a thriving commercial hub in the 7th century, positioned along major caravan routes. Beyond trade, the city held spiritual significance as home to the Kaaba, a cubic temple of black volcanic rock housing 360 idols, including Allah, alongside other deities. Into this polytheistic world, Muhammad was born around 570 CE to the Quraysh tribe. At age 40, he experienced visions in a cave on Mount Hira. The angel Gabriel commanded him to recite, and Muhammad came to understand he was Allah's chosen prophet, the final messenger in a line stretching back through Jesus, Abraham, and Adam. His revelations, later collected as the Quran, formed Islam's foundation. Muhammad's monotheistic message met resistance from Mecca's elite, whose economy depended on polytheistic pilgrimage. In 622, he and his followers emigrated to Yathrib, later Medina, the pivotal hijra that marks year 1 of the Islamic calendar. In Medina, Muhammad established the first Islamic state, uniting tribes under faith rather than blood ties. By his death in 632, he had united much of Arabia under Islam. After Muhammad's death, his old friend Abu Bakr claimed succession but faced immediate challenges from tribes who considered their allegiance personal to the Prophet. The resulting Ridda Wars lasted 9 months, during which commanders like Khalid bin al-Walid proved their military prowess by defeating rebellious tribes and ensuring the Ummah's continued unity. This victory unleashed a formidable Islamic military machine primed to expand beyond Arabia. Beginning in 633, Muslim armies exploited the exhaustion of Byzantine and Persian forces after decades of warfare. By 635-6, Damascus fell. By 648, most of the Levantine coast was conquered. Meanwhile in Iraq, Muslim forces shattered Persian armies at the Battle of Al-Qadisiyah in 636, then marched on Ctesiphon, the Persian capital, capturing it in 637 and discovering immense treasures in the White Palace of the Sassanids. Following Ali's murder in 661, Syria's governor Muawiyah established himself as the first Umayyad caliph. Though ruling less than a century, the Umayyads transformed the Islamic world. They shifted the capital from Medina to Damascus, expanded Muslim territory as far as southern France, and initiated a cultural revolution as Arabic and Islam permeated conquered societies. However, the Umayyads' rise created deep divisions. Ali's partisans, Shia, rejected their legitimacy, considering Ali Muhammad's rightful successor. When Muawiyah designated his son Yazid as heir in 680, Ali's surviving son Hussein refused allegiance and was killed during a protest march. This cemented the Sunni-Shia schism that continues to shape geopolitics 13 centuries later. When we first met the Franks, they were Germanic war bands who had charged across the Rhine, settled in Gaul, and gradually wrested control from what remained of the Roman state. The long-haired Merovingian dynasty ruled for 2.5 centuries, beginning with Childeric I, buried with fabulous treasures in Tournai. His son Clovis united the Frankish tribes, converted to Catholicism, ended Roman influence at Soissons in 486, and crushed the Visigoths in 507. After Clovis, the Merovingians gradually lost power to officials called mayors of the palace. Charles Martel transformed this office into kingship, controlling all Francia as Duke and Prince of the Franks. After Martel's death, his son Pippin the Short deposed the last Merovingian, Childeric III, in 751, establishing the Carolingian dynasty. Pippin ruled for 17 years after his papal coronation, steadily expanding Carolingian territories. He twice invaded Italy, defeating the Lombard king Aistulf and forcing him to surrender conquered lands and pay heavy tribute. Pippin granted these seized territories to the papacy, creating the Donation of Pippin that established the Papal States. When Pippin died in 768, he left a formidable war machine and extensive political alliances to his son Charlemagne. Charlemagne transformed Aachen into the administrative heart of his empire. From there, he delegated military campaigns to his adult sons while focusing on governance, issuing laws, sponsoring church construction, and sending letters urging his subjects to live Christian lives. Aachen became an intellectual powerhouse under scholars like Alcuin of York, who established an elite school for rhetoric and liberal arts. The palace scribes undertook a massive knowledge preservation project, producing perhaps 100,000 manuscripts during the 9th century that preserved classical texts from Cicero to Boethius. They developed Carolingian minuscule script, a revolutionary writing style with clear spacing, proper punctuation, and consistent use of upper and lowercase letters designed to be universally readable across Charlemagne's vast territories. On Christmas Day 800, after weeks of purging Pope Leo's enemies from Rome, Charlemagne attended Mass at St. Peter's dressed in Roman costume. Leo crowned him Emperor and Augustus, then prostrated himself at Charlemagne's feet. This imperial title would evolve into the Holy Roman Empire that endured until the Napoleonic era. As Charlemagne's empire crumbled under Louis the Pious, Bernard of Lombardy's rebellion marked the beginning of imperial fragmentation. The Treaty of Verdun in 843 formally divided the empire into three kingdoms: West Francia, roughly modern France, the Middle Kingdom, northern Italy and Burgundy, and East Francia, western Germany. The lesson was clear. Uniting Europe has only been possible once or twice per millennium, and never for long. In 909 or 910, Duke William of Aquitaine founded a new monastery at Cluny, seeking advice from the respected monk Berno. Under the terms of its foundation, Cluny was granted unusual independence from secular powers and local bishops. By the late 11th century, Cluny's abbots wielded influence comparable to kings and popes, controlling vast wealth and resources. Monasticism began with Christ's call to perfection: sell what you possess and give to the poor. From the 3rd century AD, pious Christians in the Roman Near East abandoned worldly possessions to live ascetic lives in the wilderness. Saint Anthony the Great exemplified this movement, a wealthy heir who gave everything to the poor and became a hermit, famously resisting demonic temptations. Benedict of Nursia, born around 480 to a wealthy family, became the most influential figure in Western monasticism. After abandoning his privileged life in Rome, he retreated to a cave near Subiaco. Benedict founded 12 monasteries in southern Italy, including Monte Cassino, and wrote his famous Rule, a simple yet elegant guide for monastic life that emphasized prayer, study, manual work, frugality, and obedience to the abbot. A century after Benedict's death, his remains were stolen by French monks who reburied them at Fleury Abbey, catalyzing a newfound enthusiasm for Benedictine monasticism north of the Alps. The Carolingians, particularly Charlemagne and Louis the Pious, recognized the rule's value in standardizing Christian practice across their expanding empire. When Duke William of Aquitaine established Cluny in 910, he envisioned a strictly governed Benedictine monastery answerable only to the Pope. Under its second abbot, Odo, a former warrior turned hermit, Cluny began exporting its rigorous standards to other monasteries. His practice of leaving trusted Cluniac monks as priors answerable to him created a network of reformed houses under Cluny's spiritual authority. By the High Middle Ages, monasteries had evolved into comprehensive social institutions, providing education, health care, hospitality, and elderly care, far beyond their original purpose as austere spiritual retreats. Cluny and its daughter houses dominated the pilgrim routes to Santiago de Compostela, with monasteries functioning as medieval service stations along the way. In 1098, near the end of Hugh's fourth decade as abbot of Cluny, a group of disaffected monks from Molesma established a new monastery at Citeaux. Under their first abbot, Robert of Molesma, and the English reformer Stephen Harding, these monks, who became known as Cistercians, returned to the basics of monastic life: hard labor, austere surroundings, social isolation, and constant prayer. As the chapter opens, we're transported to August 955, where Otto I, King of the Germans, assembled an army near Augsburg to confront the Magyar threat. At the Battle of Lechfeld, Otto's tactical superiority prevailed against the Magyar's feigned retreat strategy. This decisive victory marked a symbolic turning point where heavy cavalry began to dominate Western warfare. The key technological innovation was the combination of couched lance, stirrups, and cantled saddle. The lance, over 3 meters long, was tucked under the arm and aimed directly at enemies, transforming horsemen from infantrymen on horseback into guided missiles. The high-backed cantled saddle and stirrups counteracted physics, allowing riders to transfer momentum through their lances. The human impulse to romanticize warfare transformed the brutal reality of knighthood into heroic literature. The Song of Roland, dating to around 1098, elevated knightly deeds through melodramatic, ultra-violent storytelling featuring vivid characters and dramatic tension. Beyond epic poems, 13th-century writers produced chivalric handbooks like Ramon Llull's Book of the Order of Chivalry that expanded knighthood beyond mere fighting to encompass spiritual and emotional virtues. William Marshall exemplified this chivalric ideal. His remarkable life began dramatically when, as a 5-year-old hostage during England's anarchy, King Stephen nearly catapulted him at his father's castle walls. Born to a landless position as a fourth son, William trained for knighthood in Normandy and learned hard lessons about balancing bravery with practicality. After serving 3 generations of Plantagenet kings with unwavering loyalty, William rose from landless knight to Earl of Pembroke. His biography, commissioned by his son, stands as the perfect fusion of chivalric literature and political history, demonstrating how deeply the culture of chivalry informed medieval life. Today, knightly institutions persist worldwide. The Order of the Garter, founded in 1348, still includes royalty and distinguished public servants. Modern chivalric orders exist across Europe and even in America, where elite networking clubs perform dubbing ceremonies based on romanticized medieval histories. knighthood remains what it always was, an international, sometimes fantastical institution that once comprised the philosophy of the Western world's most powerful people. In the last week of August 1071, Byzantine Emperor Romanus IV Diogenes found himself in humiliating circumstances, pinned under the boot of Seljuk Sultan Alp Arslan following a disastrous military defeat at Manzikert. Though Alp Arslan eventually showed mercy and released the emperor, the damage was done. The defeat at Manzikert opened the door for Seljuk Turks to sweep through Asia Minor, severely weakening Byzantine power. In March 1095, ambassadors from Byzantine Emperor Alexius I Komnenos arrived at Pope Urban II's council in Piacenza, imploring help against Turkish forces threatening Constantinople. Urban seized this opportunity, launching an extraordinary rallying tour through southern France and Burgundy. At the Council of Clermont on November 27, 1095, Urban delivered his historic sermon, promising remission of sins to those who died in the campaign. When he mentioned liberating Jerusalem, the crowd roared, "Deus vult! God wills!" The First Crusade began with unexpected violence against Jews in the Rhineland. By 1097, better organized armies, led by nobles like Raymond of Toulouse, Godfrey of Bouillon, and the controversial Norman leader Bohemond of Toronto, arrived in Constantinople. After Easter, this Prince's Crusade of about 80,000 armed pilgrims with a corps of 7,500 knights began their campaign across Asia Minor. Despite facing harsh terrain, scorching heat, and constant Turkish harassment, the Crusaders achieved remarkable success. They captured Nicaea after a siege in May-June 1097, then defeated an innumerable, terrible mass of Turks at Dorylaeum on July 1. After crossing Asia Minor, the depleted but determined Crusaders laid siege to Antioch in October 1097. For 9 months, they endured bitter winter conditions before finally capturing the city in June 1098 through trickery. The final push to Jerusalem began in June 1099. Despite the city's formidable defenses and location, the Crusaders breached its walls on July 15th after a month-long siege. What followed was an apocalyptic slaughter that shocked even Christian chroniclers. Against all odds, Urban II's audacious plan had succeeded. The Franks had conquered Jerusalem and would maintain their presence in the Holy Land for nearly two centuries. The Fourth Crusade quickly descended into a catastrophic perversion of its original purpose. Rather than heading to Alexandria, the fleet sailed to Zadar, a Christian city that had offended Venice. Despite the citizens displaying crosses on their walls to show they too were crusaders, the Venetians and French bombarded the city into submission. Worse was to come. Lured by Prince Alexios, son of the deposed Byzantine Emperor Isaac II Angelos, the Crusaders turned toward Constantinople. After a chaotic year of political machinations, the Crusaders breached the walls in April 1204 and unleashed a horrific sack of the city. The final push to Jerusalem began in June 1099. Despite the city's formidable defenses and location, the Crusaders breached its walls on July 15th after a month-long siege. What followed was an apocalyptic slaughter that shocked even Christian chroniclers. Against all odds, Urban II's audacious plan had succeeded. The Franks had conquered Jerusalem and would maintain their presence in the Holy Land for nearly two centuries. The Fourth Crusade quickly descended into a catastrophic perversion of its original purpose. Rather than heading to Alexandria, the fleet sailed to Zadar, a Christian city that had offended Venice. Despite the citizens displaying crosses on their walls to show they too were crusaders, the Venetians and French bombarded the city into submission. Worse was to come. Lured by Prince Alexios, son of the deposed Byzantine Emperor Isaac II Angelos, the Crusaders turned toward Constantinople. After a chaotic year of political machinations, the Crusaders breached the walls in April 1204 and unleashed a horrific sack of the city. The Mongols, led by Genghis Khan, created history's largest contiguous land empire through brutal conquest, yet established a period of relative peace known as Pax Mongolica. Rising from the Mongolian steppe, they tore through Central Asia and the Middle East, destroying two great imperial dynasties, the Jin in China and the Khwarezmians in Persia. Born around 1162 near sacred Mount Burkhan Khaldun, Temujin, later Genghis Khan, entered the world clutching in his right hand a clot of blood the size of a knuckle bone. The son of a warrior in the Borjigin clan, his life took a harsh turn when his father was poisoned by rival Tatars when Temujin was just 9. Abandoned by their tribe, he and his 6 siblings survived by foraging for wild fruit and hunting small animals like marmots under their mother Holun's care. After uniting the Mongol tribes in 1206, Genghis Khan launched devastating campaigns across Asia. He first attacked northern China's western Xia and Jin dynasties, breaching the Great Wall at 3 points and sacking the Jin capital Zhongdu in 1215. Next, he annihilated the Kara Khitai. When Khwarezmian officials executed his 100-person diplomatic delegation in 1218, Genghis responded with a merciless 2-year campaign that destroyed the empire and its greatest cities, including Merv, Herat, Samarkand, and Nishapur. 14 years after Genghis Khan's death, Mongol armies returned west with devastating force. In April 1241, they scored 2 crushing victories within 72 hours. Near Legnica, they destroyed a combined Polish-Czech Templar force. At Mohi, they routed King Bela IV of Hungary, forcing him to flee to Dalmatia. As the Mongols ravaged Eastern Europe, Pope Gregory IX diverted crusaders to Hungary, but found little response. Then suddenly, the Mongols withdrew due to Ogode Khan's death in December 1241. Following Mongke's death in 1259, the Mongol Empire fractured through a protracted succession crisis. The once unified empire split into 4 distinct khanates. The Great Yun ruled China under Kublai Khan, the Chagatai Khanate controlled Central Asia, the Ilkhanate dominated Persia and Western Asia, and the Golden Horde controlled the Russian steppe. In September 1298, 2 rival maritime powers, the republics of Venice and Genoa, clashed in the Adriatic Sea near the island of Kurzawa, Korčula. At Kurzawa, the brilliant Genoese admiral Lamba Doria secured a decisive victory by driving Venetian galleys into shallow waters where they ran aground. Yet this bloody naval battle would be remembered not for Genoa's triumph, but for one particular Venetian prisoner of war, Marco Polo, a veteran merchant adventurer who had traveled further around the world than almost any living person. Marco Polo, born in Venice in 1253 to a family of merchants, was 45 when captured at the Battle of Kurzawa. His father Niccolo and uncle Maffeo had been among the first European travelers to visit Kublai Khan's court in 1260. Finding the Mongols receptive to Western commerce and diplomatic exchange, they shuttled between East and West for a decade before taking teenage Marco with them on a journey in 1271. The commercial revolution of the 13th and 14th centuries was as economically significant as the industrial revolution of the 19th century or today's digital revolution. Marco's travels weren't merely exotic tales, but valuable commercial intelligence. He carefully documented not just specific goods, but the conditions for trade. How Mongol rule pacified dangerous regions, how paper money functioned in China, and how infrastructure like tree-lined roads facilitated commerce. The most prominent traders at the Champagne and Flanders fairs came from Italian city republics, with Venice leading the pack. Though non-existent in Roman times, Venice emerged in the 6th century, initially under Byzantine control, before gaining independence under its doges by the 9th century. The Venetians evolved from salt and glass manufacturers into professional middlemen, connecting Arab North Africa, Greek Byzantium, and the Latin West through maritime trade. At the 14th century's dawn, English wool reigned supreme in global markets. This white gold enriched multiple stakeholders. The Plantagenet monarchy imposed wool export taxes to fund expensive wars. Sheep farmers accumulated tremendous wealth, and merchants profited at every stage of production and trade. Richard Whittington's remarkable career flourished through political upheaval by maintaining strategic relationships with both sides. While serving as alderman and sheriff of London, he became warden of the Mercer's Company, protecting clothmongers' interests throughout the city. His business acumen truly shined in his relationship with King Richard II, whose expensive tastes and love of luxury created a perfect customer for Whittington's fine fabrics.